Hello again and welcome everybody to another episode of BitNote. We'll be playing great video game music and talking about the games they're from, just to change up the routine a bit. Hope you enjoy. Okay, so I was just looking at sort of games, and as you know, that every so often on the show I've got a bit of a theme. So I figured this theme would kind of be maybe violence, but you know, because they're violent video games. But then it occurred to me that a staggering amount of games do kind of have some form of violence or another, so that kind of did the thing. And then I ended up including Grand Theft Auto 5 in the list because I figured it was appropriate, but I realized I actually wanted to talk about something completely different in terms of Grand Theft Auto. So it looks like that the show isn't going to stick very closely to the theme, despite the fact it's got one game that's going to actually that's called majorly to stick to that theme. So, yeah, it's about as organized as one of my regular shows, but I think that I'll still be able to get some nice sort of cohesion out of this. And to start with, I am going to play some music from The Suffering. Now, as you can tell by the name, The Suffering probably isn't a happy-go-lucky, everything-is-perfectly-fine sort of game, and I think that I'll tell you a bit more of why that's the case right after this. And so that music is from The Suffering, a PC, also on PlayStation 2 and Xbox video game that was released sometime in the mid-noughties, and I wasn't exactly So, what's the suffering about? What is so suffering about it? Well, essentially, you play as a Deathmate Row inmate who's, you know, an inmate on death row, essentially because you're being accused of murdering your wife and your children. Pretty gritty stuff. So you're probably wondering, wait, did the character actually do that or not? And that's actually one of the interesting things about the game. You actually, your actions over the course of the game determine whether you are actually guilty of that crime or not, which is very interesting. The game is basically isn't just about, you know, you being on death row and just spending time and avoiding things. No, pretty much few seconds into you staying in your prison cell, all hell breaks loose. And I mean that in a semi-literal sense, because this game is kind of a horror, tense, psychological thriller sort of game. So essentially, everything is overrun by all these gigantic, all these crazy, insane monsters. It's like every single evil thing that has ever happened on the island. And yes, you're on an island, which the prison is on an island, which makes it a little harder to escape. Like everything on the island has suddenly burst out and is trying to attack everything. It literally, all hell is breaking loose. And suddenly you're trying to find yourself trying to get a way to escape the island and all these crazy monsters that are attacking you. One of the interesting things is that the monsters really have an interesting design. It turns out that the island you're on has a huge amount of history to it. It's not just a prison there. There was also some World War II things going on, well, World War II camp, which involved people being shot at the firing line. And essentially, there was also a village which involved all these witch trials and everything. It turns out that the monsters that you fight and face and try to battle are essentially all represent some way of being executed. Because after all, this is kind of an American prison, so you not only have to deal with all the evil done by stuff on the island, but all the evil done through the killing and the convicts, and not to mention all the ways that convicts have been died. You basically get attacked by monsters that represent the lethal injection and another one that basically represents being executed by the firing line. And one of the main enemies you deal with regularly is all this great gangly thing with all these blades and a detached head that basically represents, you know, the guillotine, which was pretty rare in America but somehow found a way into that island. So that's kind of what the whole game is about. It's a creepy atmosphere. You're making way through all these dark atmospheres, all these alleyways, and suddenly monsters can attack you, and you basically have a standard controls about shooting and basic couple of melee attacks and everything else. And even at times, it's suddenly you can even go a little berserk and suddenly seem to be at this whole monster that tries to attack them back. Everything is just a very, very great experience because not only are you defeating the monsters, you're also making your way through these environments. You're also dealing with flashbacks to the day that something terrible happened to your family and finding clues about whether it's not. And on top of everything else, you've also meet a lot of survivors. You meet a lot of people who are trying to, you know, keep safe or go along with you. And often you'll end up trying to accompany these guys and, you know, you could kill them. I mean, that's actually something the games have stopped doing recently. If a character is important to the plot, then you'll end up not being able to shoot them. If you aim your gun at them and pull the trigger, either the bullets won't affect them or your gun won't work or something. And I think that's, you know, I mean, I understand it, but sometimes you just want to, like, you don't like a character in a game. And, you know, since it's just a game, you don't exactly want to, in real life, it's bad to kill people, but in video games, if a character is getting on your nerves, then and given that the game will tend to revolve around you having an array of weaponry and shooting monsters, then using it against a character who might be annoying and you don't believe is any further use to you is kind of at least an option you feel you should have. The problem, of course, is that if the character is doing something very plot relevant, you know, maybe the game developers don't want the character to die. But in this game, nearly all the time, if you help a character, it's good. It'll benefit you in some way, which is basically the game developer's way of saying that it's more moral to keep a character alive and help other people. But if you just don't give a crap, or even if a monster attacks the character and you aren't able to defend them properly, then the game will continue on and you'll keep going on with that outcome. So, you know, it's not like so many missions, you know, it's not like so many games where you got a character and they're with you and then suddenly they're attacked or killed and you have to restart the mission over because of some stupid computer controlled character that you fake. There's a reason that escort missions tend to have a bad reputation, but I'm digressing here. The music you heard was composed by Eric Aho. Suffering was by Surreal Software. And there's actually an interesting story to the music of the composition of the game. They wanted very gritty, atmospheric, you know, music that really caught the attention and very ambient. So what they did is a lot of the actual... So it was Boyd Post, who was the sound designer of the game, who decided that the music of the game would be composed by items that would actually be found in the locations you're dealing with. So they took things like garbage cans, tins, you know, even rocks for cavern sections. And basically they, and Ella Lambin, a Seattle instrument creator, actually was able to create sort of instruments using all these kind of, all these improvised, you know, items and things. And by beating them all and hitting them in rhythmically, they end up creating a very, very unique sound that's hard to very hard to dismiss. It's just, it plays in the background. It seems more real, more involved in the actual setting you're in, because it's not like some harp or violin that, you know, wouldn't really have a place in a completely gloomy screwed up American prison. But instead it's just this really environmental sound that really kind of gets to you and speaks up the atmosphere. Also, it's also, the game just proceeds very nicely. You'll tend to walk around, continue finding your way through, go through. It's kind of, it's a bit linear, but you meet a lot of characters, you learn things, and you get through some really interesting locations. Everything from quarries to the inside of the prison. There's even this kind of asylum on the that's kind of like outside of the prison grounds, but, you know, still on the island, that's been closed for a while. You end up having to go there, and boy, it's atmospheric. One great thing about this is that while it's a third-person action game, so while the camera is from behind your character, you can press a button and suddenly go to first-person view, and that's what I did for the asylum, because seeing out of the character's eyes just makes things more immediate, and I felt like for that level it was just best to just be up close and personal to the action. I love it when a game kind of does that. Not all, it took a bit of extra work from the development to just see things through the eyes, but it really worked pretty well. And in the end, how does the game end? Well, like I said, your actions dictate it. How you treat others, how you treat individual circumstances. When you get through it all, you'll get the ending that you feel you deserve, or at least the ending that you deserve from your actions. So that's all pretty good. And I just like the suffering. It's a great experience. It really keeps it going. Like I said, there's a lot of disturbing stuff, but that's kind of the point. It's sort of a horror game. Despite the fact that there's actually a lot of action in it, you're still defeating these monsters. It still doesn't break the atmosphere of feeling vulnerable, of feeling that there's a whole lot of things and feeling scared. And that's something that's very hard to do in action horror games. Most of the time, horror is generally associated by disempowering you, so you don't have enough to deal with the environment around you. And generally, if you do, then you're dominating the environment, so it's not scary. But somehow, the suffering manages to pull it off. And I think that that's always by giving you the sense that you're not just dealing with individual monsters, you're dealing with the whole island. Whatever force is on the island, whatever... all the different things that's causing all these elements from the island's past come to life and attack you. And I believe it's explained a bit more in the sequel, but I haven't played it. Whatever force this is, that is your true enemy. And knowing that you'll never be fully safe until you're off that island, I think that that's one of the things that really drives the emotion of the game. Okay, so that's The Suffering, like I said, a horror adventure. I believe it might even be legally free to download for the PC, so... Take a look for yourself. I think it was definitely offered for freeware at one point. So if you're interested in playing for the PC, take a look. And it probably plays best on the PC. So, I said earlier on that this would be about, I'd be mentioning Grand Theft Auto 5. And so, what better way to start with them? This is an original song from the game, and they really ramped up the amount of original songs from this game, called Change of Coast by Neon Indian. I'll listen. And that was Neon Indian, Change of Coast, from Grand Theft Auto V by Rockstar North, which was also developed by various other Rockstar studios. Seriously, I checked the list on Wikipedia. There's a ton of Rockstar studios. I didn't even know Rockstar had that many studios spread right throughout the world. It's like Paris and all those sorts of places. Anyway, that was Change of Heart. Neon Indian is an American electronic music band. Now, I'm not going to get too much into Grand Theft Auto 5. I haven't actually completed it yet because for reasons that I'm going to go into, and maybe in another episode I'll go into more. But it's just one thing I just like about Grand Theft Auto 5. I mean, I wasn't keen on getting it because I hadn't been electrified by Grand Theft Auto 4. In fact, I found Grand Theft Auto very, very boring. The environments kind of got the same very quickly. And dear gosh, some of the earlier missions are so incredibly boring. I mean, I loved that it had more drama. But it just... Yeah. So, Grand Theft Auto 5, I thought I wouldn't avoid it. I thought I would. Then I just broke down and got it on an impulse buy, brought it home. And I actually was really appreciated. I mean, this is... The environment of the game has got to be one of the whole things about it. It's like, it's so expansive. It's basically, Grand Theft Auto 5 is set in Los Santos, or San Andreas, which is basically kind of like a caricature of Southern California. A lot of the game takes place in Los Santos, which is like Los Angeles. Now, most of the time when games, or pretty much any media, try to do a takeoff of another location, they just do a few things, maybe copy a whole, you know, maybe a few landmarks, maybe a few atmospheres, maybe textures, that sort of stuff. No. Los Santos does something that kind of Grand Theft Auto have been doing, have been doing for a while, which is do an almost complete, not one-to-one, but just do a complete condensed caricature of the entire place, but in stunning detail. I mean, pretty much any major landmark that you have in Los Angeles pops up in Los Santos. I mean, everything. That great big circular bank building, that circular dome, of course, LAX with the that really weird white dome kind of mesh thingamabob. I have no idea what it is. Even the Hollywood sign, which of course in this game is called Vinewood, and Venice Beach, that little pier thing that goes in Venice Beach, that little, even a street where there's, that's famous for shopping, pretty much everything. It's actually hugely impressive how Rockstar were actually took an entire city, an entire area, not just the city, in some area, and condensed it down to this vibrant center that's kind of an abstraction. I mean, by coincidence, last night I was watching a program that had a quick thing said on Venice Beach in Los Angeles, and looking up, I just suddenly, my mind clicked, and suddenly I just imagined all the things that were around it on the basis of Grand Theft Auto. I mean, of course, it's not the exact, you know, of course, the map in Grand Theft Auto 5 isn't the same as in real life, but it's just, it's such a close approximation. There's so much close details that I suppose that it's almost like being there. I mean, that's one of the huge things about games like this. It's almost like virtual tourism. You're navigating what seems like so close to a real environment, and you're walking around and seeing it all and learning a few things. This actually happened, like I think I mentioned, with Grand Theft Auto 4. I was at the southern. I recently made a trip to Manhattan, New York City. I was at the very southern end of Battery Park, and I remembered, according to Grand Theft Auto 4, which of course has Liberty City based in it, that if I go up the East Coast, I'd bump into, I think, Pier 47 or whatever the name is. Just to confuse it, they of course renamed it something else. That's the only different thing. They always keep renaming everything because it's set in a fictional world, despite the fact it's more based on the real world than a lot of other games that are ostensibly based in the real world. And so just following what I remember from the game, I went up the east coast of Manhattan Island. I passed the helicopter thing, which was also in the game, and then I reached the pier as well. So it's just Rockstar just to have this whole thing about this environment. So when I started playing the game, that's kind of what I did. I play a few missions, which are, you know, kind of okay. And then you just go exploring. You go seeing this really incredible area. You just, with so much detail, so much things. And You get on a train, you go to the north, you see this great big mountain, you try to climb it constantly, you then jump off it with a bike and just parasail around. It's just, it really extracts the explorer in me, just how much detail and every single part of the game is crafted. They aren't a case where, in so many games, where they just make one model and just click it, click, place here, 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 and make just a whole, like, clone thing of repeating scenery. It's not like that. And it's not like they just made a great big open, like, area and just put a few decorations here. No, they crafted this thing. They put so much energy and detail into it. And that really comes across and is really, really what I love about the game. I mean, just having this great big open environment. Now, as for the missions, see, there's two ways of playing this game. You kind of explore and mess around and have fun, or you play it kind of like a lot of other games where there's level after level after level. The only difference is that in a lot of other games, you do one level and then you do the next. In this game, you do kind of a level, so to speak, or a mission, and then you have to, then basically a bunch of markers appear in various locations on the map, and you have to go to there to trigger what's called another level, or they're called a mission, which will involve you doing a bunch of stuff on that map, and then when you're done that, you have to go to another mission. Now, there's a lot of good missions. I don't have an issue with the missions, but it's just when you're doing a mission, it's like an arbitrary set of actions. It's kind of like you're going through like a play almost. You're told to go to this point and say this, go to that point, do that. And of course, there'll be a lot of shooting a bunch of people that come across your way or driving something really, really fast. You know, you're doing stuff, but a lot of the time it just feels like you're kind of like being shuffled along a very specific path. And it's like the developers can see that they're saying, yes, you must do these set of actions and then we will be very happy because you'll led through a movie sequence. And you're not quite feeling it because you're going, well, yeah, but it's all arbitrary. What if I want to do this? And they're like, no, you have to do that. And so it's kind of like, with all that said, it's kind of why you want to go and just explore, why you want to just find a car that's pulling along a trailer with a boat on top and then just drive the whole thing off into a pier and then get into the boat and speed off. You want to do random stuff. You want to do fun things like that. And the game actually isn't really that much fun, actually, which is weird. It's like I was playing it. I found it captivating. I found it absorbing. I found the whole world really enthralling. But a lot of the time, the game is actually kind of boring. It's not that easy to trigger some crazy thing going on. A lot of the missions are very boring or involve you going around just doing very random things or just driving from one point to the other. And while there are quite a few exciting things here and there and some great like excitement and bank heists and everything, which, like I said, follow the directions, it's like a lot of the time you're just not doing things that are hugely captivating or really that well written. And where do I start with with the game that tries to pretend it's funny and a satire but kind of really isn't on either events? But it's kind of funny that it's just a game that this absorbing and with so much detail and so much effort. And you know, there's a couple of things, you know, that aren't keen about it, but it's just, you know, that's why it's like these open world games are fun, because you can go across your old things. But it's kind of funny that a game that's so successful doesn't have a lot of things that you'd actually assume would be in a successful game, like being very, very fun or being very exciting or over the top. I mean, that's where Saints Row has gone. I've actually told people this. Saints Row and Grand Theft Auto is like your parent, you know. Maybe they'll give you a jet fighter. Maybe they'll give you like a helicopter or cool stuff or things to blow up. But, you know, you have to earn it. You have to go through this mission and that mission. You have to take a tow truck and tow a lot of cars for no particular reason while some dialogue that's kind of serious but kind of really pointless also plays in the background. You have to earn your excitement. You have to earn everything. But with Saints Row, Saints Row isn't like the father. It's like the crazy uncle. It gives you everything. It gives you helicopters. It gives you cool things. It says, are you tired of having to run everywhere and then run out? Well, let's give you infinite running. All you have to do is do these crazy missions where, you know, it rewards you, but it rewards you fast and quick. It gives you cool stuff very, very quickly. Suddenly you're flying around in helicopters, shooting stuff, blasting up things, and it feels more like a fun little sandbox than Grand Theft Auto, which is more like, you know, a seriousness simulator, which is captivating in how it portrays the real world, but not very, very exciting. At least at times. Sometimes you do get some good tension going on. Sometimes you get onto up a plane and then shoot some cars and then watch as the entire police force try to get you and you take your assault rifle and shoot down a lot of helicopters. But, and, you know, as they try to attack you and then it's kind of fun and trying to shoot the pilot so that the whole thing spins out of control and the gunners on the sides are suddenly wondering why, what they can do. But it's just, it's not that it's muted, it's just so serious. It's lacking a lot of real excitement. It's, you're doing things in a very serious world, which you don't really seem to be able to change that much. And even the missions seem to indicate that you're fairly impotent, which is kind of crazy. You spent, one of the missions basically tries to do an elaborate heist, only it goes wrong and you don't actually get anything. And then, and you can't actually change that one way or the other. And another one, well, you know, it just doesn't even work. Anyway, and another one, it just doesn't even seem to work very well on its own merits. It's just you're meant to do a set of missions and there's meant to be a payoff and then there just kind of isn't one, which is kind of part of the plot, but that's kind of feeding into the whole thing. This game is so serious, you know, or made down, you know, we don't need to give you crazy things. Having said that, like I said, it's about a ton better than Grand Theft Auto 4, which was incredibly boring. I mean, it loses a bit of the drama and a bit of the, you know, depth of emotion, which I thought was a bit of a pity, but it's just very hard to tell a serious story about a straight-faced character when you know that they'll speak about remorse one scene and then in the next scene you can have them go outside, hijack a car, ram over pedestrians and then crash and then blow everything up with grenades. But there you have it. That's Grand Theft Auto for you. You can do some crazy stuff, but it seems like Rockstar doesn't want you to, I guess. Okay. All right, we're coming up to the end of their show now, so I think I'll just play another Grand Theft Auto music. This is called Sleepwalking by the Chain Gang of 1974, and don't let the name, you know, and this is actually more original music that was composed for the game. And I'll just leave you with that. So, this has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening.